Grab and Go Podcast 13.16. Unlike Betty White, Michigan basketball isn't dead yet.
Too soon.
Hello and welcome. COVID has passed over the Fisher households.
Yay!
Successfully.
We're released. We're free. We're at school. The kids are at school!
The logistics, yeah. So we've had some issues. Just logistically about like being able to do this. But we're here now.
Yes.
Talking about a couple basketball games. We'll have a hockey segment. We'll talk about all the Harbaugh foo-for-all, which seems all whatever.
Doesn't mostly matter. Over.
But yeah. The first thing we would like to do is we'd like to talk about our sponsors. The MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out UGPMichiganApparel.com and find our stuff at MGOBlogStore.com. We also want to thank our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, which is where we usually are, but you know.
Yeah.
All right. Michigan 80, Indiana 62. Michigan's best win of the year, road game that saw them fly up 18 spots in the net to the fringe of the bubble. Now 3-3 in league play. And the strange thing about this game is just how easy everything came. So this was a parade of wide open threes that Michigan canned 11 of 17. That's a 65% clip. They would have won if they'd only hit 6 threes. So it wasn't just the threes. They also outshot Indiana from inside the arc, had more assists, had a better offensive rebound rate, even though they had fewer offensive rebounds. So a pretty comprehensive victory. And the thing that sort of leapt out to me was Hunter Dickinson hitting 3 or 4 threes and also hitting a step back long two where his toe was on the line.
Right.
So he's 9 of 23 on the season. So that's not much sample size, but that's a 39% clip. And you know, even though we don't have much sample size for his three-point shooting, we've seen him take long twos both this year and last to give us some indication that that's not just a fluke.
Yeah, sure. And 23s from your center over the course of a season is, you know, that changes the way that they have to play you. And that was kind of one of the points about the three-point shooting in this game is not only were they wide open, they're all coming from the bigs, right? I mean, as long as you count Caleb Houston as a forward, he's 6'8". So, I mean, they're all large. It wasn't like the point guards were, like, splashing it when they haven't been before. You know, these were wide-open shots created by spacing, by getting, you know, Brandon Johns got one, Williams got, I think, got two of them, and then, you know, obviously the center. So, that's more about, like, where that room comes from, and I don't think Michigan's had that space all season.
Well, the interesting thing to me is sort of midway through last year, EJ Liddell for Ohio State went from a guy who shot 5 of 26 as a freshman and it hit a total of like 2 or 3 threes into the meat of the Big Ten season. And then he goes off 4 of 7 from 3 against Illinois. And from there, he's a consistent threat. Now, he's not draining 6 threes every game, right? He's hitting 1, 2, sometimes 3. But his season stats are 27 for 80, and he was 20 of 51 in Big Ten play. So he's only taking 2 or 3 of those a game, right?
Yeah.
But there's a takeoff point if you look at the Torvik stuff. And last year, Ohio State had the 4th best offense in the country. And that was with like EJ Liddell, Dwayne Washington was pretty good, but the rest of that team.
Yeah, they're guys.
They had a couple of guys who were good players, and then they had just some okay dudes. And the other similarity is that Ohio State basically played two bigs the whole time because Kyle Young was out there at the same time. So I think if you look at this Michigan team, there are some similarities there. And I think if you can have Hunter Dickinson continue shooting from the outside at a clip that just means that you have to check him, right?
Right.
Can run the pick and pop stuff and he can get off a few threes a game. And then you have Musa Diabate on the inside against a guy who's much smaller and less athletic than him.
Well, I mean, this time he was drawing because TJD would come out with Dickinson. Yeah. So like that. And I mean, that's how you play two bigs, is if one of them can pop out. Now, you don't always have to pop it out to the three line. As long as he can, like, shoot elbow jumpers from the free throw line, that still creates the kind of space that you need. And Michigan was doing that, too. They were kind of high-lowing both the two of them in order to so it's not just packing them all in. And they also would run the two of them in together just to run off space for Houston. So I know that you said that, like, you know, had Houston literally missed all of his three-pointers, I think Michigan still wins this game, but him making his shots is such a big thing for this team. You brought up Ohio State, like they had Justin Ahrens, who was just a shooter, right? Like that guy just sat out there and made 46% of his threes. That's all he did. And Houston doesn't have to hit 46%, but you know if he can just be out there not missing. Johns too. I mean, it was just one shot, but Johns didn't hesitate when he got that off. Williams. You know, he made a couple of his too. And those are guys that have been not only not like just missing, but not taking, right? Houston's been putting the ball on the floor and trying to go to the lane. And he gets blocked more often than not, I think, when he goes down in there.
So Matt was pointing out the various sets that Michigan was running, both on Twitter and in our Slack, just, you know, talking about how Michigan got so many open shots against a team that entered this game, I think, in the top 20 in defense in KenPom. So even through kind of the struggles of this season, Michigan has still been running sets that should be getting them good looks. It's just that you have a young team, you are trying to incorporate a transfer point guard. You know, you enter the season and Diabate is coming off the bench and it becomes clear that he has to start. So you're kind of changing things midstream. I don't know how much he was practicing at the four. I assume that he was mostly getting minutes early in the season in practice as the backup five, but you just have a lot of moving parts and a complicated offense. And it just didn't really seem like it was clicking. And in the last, I would say three games, because even that Illinois game where they got run off the court in the last 5 minutes, because I mean, that's a good Illinois team, and Michigan didn't have Hunter Dickinson. And to be competitive in that game on the road, I think, bodes well.
Yeah.
Back to the Diabate point. So this was a game where he was matched up against Race Thompson. Race Thompson is probably going to be one of the bigger guys he's going up against at the four. Mm-hmm. He puts up 138 O rating, gets three offensive rebounds, gets the line seven times, has a couple of assists, no turnovers. And then when Dickinson picks up his third foul early in the second half, they're able to flip him onto Trace Jackson Davis, who has an okay day, but it's not like he went off or anything. You know, he had 17 points on 16 shooting possessions. He had no assists, one turnover. But that luxury Michigan has, I think, was a major factor in the win. And then to be able to have both those guys on the floor and then have an offense that got a lot of great looks, that's really encouraging.
Yeah, and you mentioned too in the basketball, it's about how Hunter Dickinson was able to keep playing even after he got three fouls, because like you could just move him onto you didn't have to have him on TJD all the time, because Diabate can stay on the floor. You can still have both those guys out there and just kind of transition how you want to defend a little bit. And that left Hunter Dickinson on the floor when he was that big offensive threat. So you're not taking him off and trying to go with, Johns or something like that. I know I just credited Johns, but it's kind of a drop-off, right? So you're able to keep that offensive threat on the floor because you can play either one of those guys at center. And then also, Diabate just had so much energy in this game. I mean, you add his athleticism, which is incredible, to when he's playing like that, he's just, you know, playing like a man possessed. He was just creating possessions by diving in there and knocking the ball away and jumping in for offensive rebounds and kicking it back out again. And, I mean, every single time Indiana was about to charge back, Diabate would just charge in there and kind of mess them up. And that's, you know, you and I can't really measure that kind of stuff, but we see it in the game, certainly.
Yeah, and one thing that Matt said on the Slack is that Houston needs a lot of time to get a shot off, and then he's deadly, but you know, he needs the time. Mm-hmm. And I went and checked Synergy about this, and that's a stat that the numbers show. Because he's like slightly below average as a catch and shoot guy when he's guarded, and then he's like 71st percentile when he's unguarded, and he's hitting 1.3 points per possession, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably an encouraging sign, because as the season goes along, we're seeing Michigan get better looks. So if Houston's a guy who just can't be left and you're running high low sets, that's going to help, because either you're going to be giving a guy an open look who you should not be giving an open look, or you're going to get one-on-one matchups with Diabate and Dickinson. And the thing about Diabate is he's not just a guy who's absorbing, you know, he's not just dunking off assists.
Right.
He's got his own post moves. In this game, he has an and one where he's able to dust Jackson Davis on the outside and get to the rim and pick up a blocking call. And we've seen him post successfully, and he is coming along very quickly. And I think being around Juwan Howard is going to be real helpful in that regard. So if you have Dickinson in the high post where you have to respect his shot, and you have Diabate on the low post, I think you can really do a lot of work like that. So I think this team is turning the corner.
Yeah. I mean, the variance that they have now on defense is something they did not have earlier this season. I mean, they were really a mess before. You know, they were just leaving guys open on the perimeter. So even if they did dominate inside, or Diabate took away that the play that the offense was running, they would still be able to like just break them down and kick it out and get a good shot off anyway. I still think there's some problems that Michigan has as far as like their defensive organization. Houston, even in this game, was not getting out there necessarily all the time, and you know, gave up a few looks.
He's making an error here and there, which is a vast improvement on what was happening earlier in the season. So there are still situations where it's like, yeah, that guy's a freshman, but they are much less frequent. So, I mean,
well, you're bringing up.
It feels a little bit like Michigan hockey teams of late, where they get better in the second half because they're young, mm-hmm. and they're getting better faster than other teams. And I think that this team, with two starters who are true freshmen, and again, Devontae Jones, who is an experienced player, but obviously had a hard time adjusting to a high major level of play. I think you can make a case that this Michigan team is going to get better faster than a lot of teams in the country, just because they have so many key players who are underclassmen. And you see that happen with a Kentucky, probably to a greater extent than it's going to happen at Michigan. But yeah, I feel like this is a team that is currently on the fringe of the bubble. On Torvik, they're the fifth team out if the season ended today, but Torvik projects them as a 10 seed. So all of a sudden you're like, okay, this season is a lost season. And like, no, if they keep playing like this, they're going to be in a tournament. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the Maryland game.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help.
Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGO Blog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGO Blog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGOblog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
I get my peaches out in Georgia, apple bottom from New York, orange in Florida, vitamin C mixed with this vitamin D, now you got vitamin me and your prescriptions fill more than them trees in California. I'm always gonna know you, kiss you and caress you, anything just to spoil you, gift you, protect you, sex you like you never been sexed, got your legs shaking like the go-go challenge, so
who's next?
Crushed grapes and Mauritius. Girl, you my flavor of love. You so delicious. I'ma make you my missus. All these candy-coated kisses. You my strawberry shortcake. That ass'll make me catch a charge and miss the court date. Sweet as honeydew. Watch me kneel right in front of you. We'll set the world on fire and light a blunt or two. I got
the all right, Maryland, another near 20-point beatdown. This one, Michigan shoots 68% from two, which is a lot. They rebound almost 40% of their few misses. And I know that Maryland is not a particularly good team, but Michigan rushes out to a big lead and just was never threatened by a Maryland team that just seems like less than the sum of its parts. Like, they come into the season, they're like, all right, well, they got a point guard now. They have this big center from Georgetown who is playing pretty well. And Fats Russell was possibly the worst point guard I've seen in the Big Ten since Isaiah Washington.
And that was the guy we were, you know, that was the guy we wanted, right? Or that was the other option that Michigan had at point guard other than Devontae Jones.
I mean, this is a guy who shot 40% from two in the A-10 last year. I mean, that was his career. Like,
right.
He's a 41% shooter from two. And you can see why. Because, like, he just does stuff.
Yeah.
And occasionally it goes in, but there's really no rhyme or reason to it. And so you've got, you know, Scott and Eric Ayala, and they played a guy who is an Old Dominion up transfer.
Kudus?
Who had Xavier Green.
Oh, yeah.
Who had an 81-0 rating at Old Dominion. He plays 21 minutes in this game. Do you know how many shots he took?
None. I saw his O rating is 25. I just pulled up KenPom. A 25 O rating for that game.
No shots in this game.
Yeah. Two turnovers, one assist.
Yeah. So you have Ayala and Dante Scott, who are good players, and then they just don't have anybody else. They have just a shocking lack of talent on this team. So I guess I'm not too surprised what happened, but you go into this game and, you know, Michigan's 1-3 in Big Ten play, and you're like, I don't know what to expect, but Michigan shoots pretty well from the outside. Houston again got some open looks with 3 or 4, and then Dickinson just put whoever they put on him in a trash can.
Yeah.
So he goes 9 of 12 from 2, hits a 3, he has 6 assists. So they were insta-doubling him most of the game, and it didn't matter because he still got his shots up, and even when he was passing out, he was picking up assists. And that's unusual because usually we see Dickinson picking up hockey assists, and there were some of those in this game. So his gravity was probably responsible for more than just the 6 assists.
Yeah. Well, part of their problem was Kudus Wahab is the Georgetown transfer. And
yeah,
he was supposed to be like the center that Maryland has always needed. And I mean, he just wasn't. I thought that, you know, Dickinson was putting him in a trash can. He only played 16 minutes, and then they were trying to put Dante Scott against him, and you can't small big against Michigan, right? Like you can try to small ball if you can shoot over them, but you know the Maryland wasn't even shooting that well.
And then so they have this freshman named Julian Reese who took over the starting job in the game before.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't start in this game, but gets more minutes. And he's like, you know, 6'9", 230. Like, that guy is not going to keep up with Hunter Dickinson. Like, he's a pretty decent recruit, but he was like 60th. And like, talking about an All-American level center going up against a freshman who's, I mean, he had a couple threes in this game, but other than that, it was like,
yeah, it's like freshman Brandon Johns versus Hunter Dickinson. Like, that's not the matchup you're going to want to put out there.
We did see a Eli Brooks to Frankie Collins alley-oop, which was
the second
amazing.
Most insane play by Frankie at the rim.
And then Frankie had some sort, I don't even know how to describe it, some sort of reverse hook sky ball layup that everybody was like, oh my God. And then he like airballed 2 threes.
Yeah, they were bad. His form looks good. Like when he's going up, it looks like, you know, he doesn't look like, you know, X looked where like, you know, he's all compact and then like the ball takes forever to go up and he has a low release point. Like Frankie looks like a 3-point shooter when it's going up and then the ball just goes completely the opposite direction.
Yeah, it was suboptimal.
I mean, Ken, is that a fixable thing? Is that like is Frankie a possible shooter one day that just, you know, needs to learn how to do that? Or I don't know. Like I'm not used to seeing a good shot that looks that bad.
You mean a bad shot that looks that good?
Well, yeah. That would be the way to put it.
Well, I mean, even Simpson got to 31-32% over the course of his career. The other thing about Frankie is he's shooting 38% on free throws right now. So he's 8 of 21.
So
I don't know. I don't know how much of that is just freshman nerves and stuff. Often in, you know, early days for freshmen, their shooting can be way off what their actual talent is. Like, you know, Bufkin's in the same boat. Bufkin's shooting 21% from three. Like, I don't think that's his true talent level. So you always want to be a little cautious ascribing freshman level performance. And I think Eli Brooks is a great example of that because Eli Brooks shot 25% from three as a freshman and 29% as a sophomore. And then the last 2 years, he's been 36, 40, 36. So it is something that might come, I don't necessarily think you want to rely on it, but Frankie's a guy who I think is going to be the sort of point guard who doesn't need to be a shooter because he's going to be ball dominant. He's going to be running the pick and roll. He's going to be testing people in the lane. And then if you surround him with three guys next to him who can shoot, then you can make that work. And I mean, I don't know what we're looking at next year in terms of is Diabate back, is Houston back,
right,
et cetera. But I think you'll be able to find guys to surround him with and have a functional offense. But that's next year.
It did make you wonder. I mean, Devontae Jones had a great game. But like this game and the Illinois game that preceded it, I kind of was starting to get the feeling like, man, I would like to see what happens if they could fast forward that development to Frankie a little bit more. Because he, you know, like you said, he's ball dominant. When he's moving with the ball, it opens up things for other guys because it's really hard to flash him. And yeah,
I mean, the thing is, I kind of feel the same way about that. And then if you look at his numbers, they are hideous.
Right.
I'm always like, yeah, let's see what Frankie can do. And then I'm like, all right, Frankie did the good thing. And then you go look at what's going on. And you're like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
27 turnover rate. So he's a work in progress. I think he's going to get there. But yeah, the moment where it felt like Michigan was going to have to go with Collins over Devontae Jones has passed.
Yeah.
And that might be in part because Jones is shooting over his head, I guess, because he's shooting 44% from three on the season. But also, we saw something like this last year with Mike Smith, where Mike Smith started off the year and his turnovers were out of control and he kind of like was able to dial it back. In his six Big Ten games, Jones's turnover rate is 12. So he's got a 20.7 overall. But in the last six games, he's really kind of found a spot where he's racking up assists. He's got 25. His assist rate is double his turnover rate in Big Ten play. That's something you can work with, even if he's not shooting particularly well. But that seems like he's turned a corner. And, you know, he's bigger than Mike Smith was significantly. Maybe not a great athlete, but still a lot of the Mike Smith stuff last year was just like he was trying to make passes. And it was like, you're not in the Ivy League anymore. And you're like 5'9".
Right.
So you just don't have those angles. Jones is not going to be jumping out of the gym anytime soon. But just in terms of is he big enough to run pick and roll stuff reasonably well? Yeah, he is. So that also feels like a major reason that Michigan kind of feels like they're turning a corner here, is that Jones over the last six games has seemed like a real point guard and not an overwhelmed up transfer. So
yeah,
good stuff.
As long as he can do that while not being like terrible on defense, like you said, his athleticism is a little weak, but I mean, he managed to stay in front of Xavier Johnson, who's not the same level of player that some of the other point guards in the league, but
he's pretty feisty. I disliked him immensely, but like, I was just like, this guy is annoying.
Right.
But also he's shooting 35% from two in Big Ten play. So,
right. So that's the question though, with Jones is like, what happens? Cause even Nebraska was kind of abusing him. And if there's a spot where you kind of have to say, you know, Jones, you're either going to have to like score a lot to make up for this or not, or you know, you can't have him and Eli both out there getting abused by super athletic guards. And like, you know, if Michigan is going to make the tournament, they're going to have to beat a couple teams that have those, you know, like Ohio State, like Michigan State. You know, they're going to have to at least not be a complete sieve there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they can manage that. I don't think Ohio State has a
for
athletic point guard.
No, I mean, you know what? I was thinking about Washington still being there. Washington's gone, so.
Yeah, I mean, their Kempom thinks that their point guard is Jamari Wheeler, which is wild stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk some Harbaugh nonsense.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management.
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
Because of logistical issues, I am not physically present with the Sklar brothers, but we have recorded the intro because propriety demands no less. So here we go. Seth! Randy! Jason! I need takes hotter than Hunter Dickinson in the last couple of games. Ah!
All right. Now you may proceed with the segment. I will be taped having a hot take later on. Well, here's my hot take, guys. Michigan is going to be a 6 seed.
Whoa.
They've turned the corner, folks.
Whoa.
They've turned the corner. We've got Hunter Dickinson shooting threes. We have Musa Diabate getting jiggy with it in the post. I'm sorry I said that. We got Caleb Houston mostly doing what he should be doing on defense, hitting open threes. It's coming. You can see them turn a corner. They just blew out two teams by almost 20 points that were not flukes. 6 seed. 6. 6. Ring it up.
That's
ring it up. I'm not present. so I can't respond to any of your responses to my hot take.
I'm right here. I'm right here, Brian.
Sklar's just have to endure this. They've endured
it. They've endured it. They're here. They are here. Yes. Brian's gone. But we do have the Sklar's here now.
Oh, wow. Even, that gave me a jolt of, like, confidence. His confidence.
To hear it from him. Yeah, he really feels like they've turned a corner, and Brian turned a corner and walked away from all of us. So that's great.
the guy has, like, one moment of positivity all year and just drops the mic.
Exactly.
Drops the mic and walks out.
Right.
Well, no, I like it. Well, we've got to get into our hot takes. Seth, we'll let you dictate who goes next.
All right. Do I have to do the voice?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. No, I think Brian. I think I got Brian recorded doing the voice already. So I'm just going to go into Randy. What's your hottest take?
The University of Michigan will win the Director's Cup this year.
Ooh.
Okay. So I watched.
Talk about positivity.
So I watched gymnastics last night, and they beat the 7th-ranked Minnesota team, women's gymnastics. So I believe they're the number one ranked team, and I think they're going to go super far. Women's basketball is ranked 7th right now, and I do believe they have all the things, the key elements to put together a deep tournament run. I think hockey has a chance to win it all this year. I think baseball could make another run this year. I think basketball is going to make, I don't know if they're going to be a 6th seed, like Brian said. I think they're going to make it into the play-in. And I think they're going to have a deep run like UCLA had last year and make it to the Elite Eight. I think all those things add up along
softball.
With football.
Softball.
Softball is going to be great this year, too. So all those things,
baby.
All those things add up to the first ever. Is it maybe the first ever Director's Cup that Michigan has ever won? I know we've come close before, but
I mean,
I think it's
basically the Stanford Cup. And that's the thing. Stanford has like 20 more sports than anybody. So they're just going to like start adding up on those things, too. Like you have to win like everything.
Right, but we are going to win a lot of things. I mean, and a national championship in hockey, but national championship in women's gymnastics. I think men's gymnastics is going to do really well. So, you know, you got a lot of things that are going for you. So I think this is the year for Michigan to win the Director's Cup.
That women's gymnastics meet was a barn burner too, by the way.
Incredible. Yeah. And you know, the craziest thing, because my daughter did gymnastics for years and years, is the event that you have to do really well on, that's your chance to sort of outscore people, is the beam. The beam is just so hard. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's where people fall. That's where people stumble. That's not as easy as the floor, obviously, but it's like, that's the one. And so, you know, Michigan, their beam work yesterday was just insane. I love Bev Plaki. I'm a Bev Plaki fan.
Isn't Bev, wasn't her son Drake Johnson? Did I read that once?
I thought her son was Drake the rapper, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
It's one of the two.
It was God's plan.
It's God's plan. It's all God's plan.
Jason, give me your hottest take.
Michigan football will deliver us a Heisman Trophy to Jake Moody. I gave it hot.
That is, you know why that's super hot? Because it's like it suggests that Jake Moody could possibly be any better.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm gonna tell you something right now. I think that more than one game next year will be determined by a field goal. I think that our defense is not going to be as good as it was. I think we'll be in some closer games than we thought, some shootouts, and he will kick outs, and I think he will win a couple kickouts next year, and you. We have our – look at what special teams did for San Francisco in their playoff game. Mm-hmm. Special teams won them that game. Block, punt, touchdown. Mm-hmm. Michigan has great special teams. I really – this is almost an ode to the overall special teams, but I am licking my chops at the fact
Your hot take should have been Harbaugh comes back just to coach this special teams unit.
Right. I mean, well, you've got a Harbaugh coaching the special teams.
Yeah, Jay Harbaugh literally might do that.
He might. I mean, he stays and his dad leaves.
Yeah. It gets him out of the shadow, doesn't it?
A little bit.
I mean, whoever comes in would be a fool to get rid of him, because you think about what our special teams unit is going to be next year. You've got A.J. Henning poised to break out. I mean, he is ready. Like, he already is gaining confidence. He kind of knows what he can do. And we haven't seen the ceiling of what that guy can do. He's broken some for 20 yards, 40 yards, 30 yards. He hasn't taken any to the house. He will take him to the house, all right?
Yep.
I believe that's going to happen. And then I also think that Brad Robbins coming back is no small thing. That is huge, because not only is he the punter, he's the holder. You got your long snapper coming back. You got, you know, everybody's coming back, and Jake Moody is the best kicker Michigan has ever had, and we've had some great ones. So I am – obviously it's a hot take, but I think that Michigan's special teams next year will make up the difference in a couple areas that we're lacking from losses this year to players.
It might win you that game at Kinnick is what you're saying.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's the one I'm afraid of. All right, my hot take is keep telling people that Michigan dodged MSU and Purdue because it's the Maverick Morgan of the year.
Okay. Yeah, baby. Wow.
I mean,
okay.
When did they turn it around, right? Like, it was after the COVID break, like the Illinois game. I mean, without – if they were competitive in that game without Hunter Dickinson, which means you throw Hunter Dickinson to that game. So – we got that one. They just trounced Maryland, which is not a very good team. They trounced Indiana. If this is the turnaround, what caused it? You know, it wasn't the COVID break. It was telling
people that we duck those guys. Well, I mean, think about it. We lost to Illinois by, like, what, 14 or 15 points?
Yeah, but they were tied. They were up by one or down by one.
Yeah, they were down one by with one seven minutes like, to go.
Yeah,
45-44. But when you think about it, like, what does Hunter Dickinson bring you? I mean, yes, he scored 25 points against Indiana. He doesn't score that against Illinois because they have better interior defense. But what if he scores 15 points? And what if he provides the interior defense that Jaron Foles couldn't do? So it's a swing of a certain amount of points. I agree with you. I think they're very much in that game with Hunter Dickinson. Certainly Hunter Dickinson playing the way that he is now. And I think, like, great. Everybody say that they're ducking. I can't wait for Illinois to come back to Chrysler and play that game. I can't wait.
Well, and I think Hunter Dickinson, I think the fact that he's made a few threes is the best possible thing for Michigan basketball, because now he's really legitimately playing for his NBA stock in addition to for the team. But I think the more he hits these threes and the more he does sit. So now he's hitting the threes, and now players are also scouts are looking at his interior game a little bit closer, because they're like, all right, he can step out and he can hit the three. You got to respect that.
Yeah. I don't know how much that's going to, we talked about how it's affected Michigan already, but, like, I mean, the amount of effort that this team has shown those last three games, that's what's been different. And, like, do you remember the Maverick Morgan year? Like, that team kind of had a little bit of effort problems until that moment, right? As soon as you called them white collar, like, they went off.
That's right.
You've got all the makings, right?
About that Walton year when they came back, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the year we're talking about?
That's the year.
Yeah, that's the year where they had that great February, and then the plane went off the track and went off the runway, and they're in practice uniforms. Is that the same?
That was the same Maverick Morgan who lost to a bunch of Michigan players in pajamas. That's how that happened. So that's
what I'm saying. That's a great point. Yeah, exactly. Everybody needs motivation, and why not tell them that they're ducking them and give. Yeah. Give this team a chance
Dan Dakich is on our side. He's been popping that all off on Twitter all week. Like, Michigan's. He said Michigan was going to get creamed by Indiana, but at least they showed up. Yeah.
I mean, that was you got to beat Northwestern, and they're no cakewalk. But, I mean, what if you do beat Michigan State at Michigan State? How sweet would that be? Sort of give them a little taste of what was given to us.
I'm not counting anything in the Breslin because things go weird there.
Hunter Dickinson, to quote Terry Mills, Hunter Dickinson loves being the villain, and he loves being the villain on the road. You saw what he did in Indiana at Assembly Hall. It doesn't get louder than Assembly Hall. Randy and I were in shooting hoops inside of Assembly Hall when we went down to perform in Bloomington. That is a scary place. It just goes straight up on both sides, and the people who are down near the court are on top of the court in a way that they're not at the Breslin Center. It's scarier at Indiana. And he just turned to the crowd and got in their face, and he's like, now what? Now what? And he loves it. He lives for that moment. I feel like he is rising to this moment right now, and anything's possible.
There was a great moment in the Indiana game when everyone wanted to leave. There was the break for the under four timeout, and like there was a commercial break, and then they come back and they show the crowd, and everyone, because like it's such an old stadium, it was not built for everyone to exit quickly. So there's just right. lines in the aisles. They all want to leave, but they can't. They're all just trapped in the aisles with their backs turned just as this thing's just playing out. And I'm like, that's...
Is there anything better than forcing people to put their coats on? Like, to me, that is like the ultimate... You did your job as a basketball team. Forcing people to put their coats on is the ultimate face.
When you would rather stand in line than watch your team, that's when we really got you. And they're like, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm just going to queue.
Send them to the exits early. Send them to the exits early at Breslin. That's all.
Get in line in East Lansing. There you go.
So if you would like to get in line and get onto the listen to these fellows as often as I get to, every time there's a Michigan loss, I might cut that. Go ahead and subscribe to their podcast, View from the Cheap Seats. And if you want to add your own hot takes, please put them in the comments of that podcast. And that's the place to put them in. We should pull those out sometime because I've read them before, but they're
good. Just go to iTunes and you can rate and review the podcast. Put your comments in the review of the podcast because reviews really help us out. We have a great one this week. Al Madrigal, who's a huge 49ers fan, is going to just talk about this 49ers victory. I just spoke to him. I just texted back and forth with him. Ryan Leaf is going to be our guest next week. He's going to break down the Super Bowl contenders. And he's friends with friends of ours, and he's fantastic. But the show is really a great combination of everything that we love. It's comedy, it's sports. I feel like everybody who listens to this show, and we are avid listeners and fans of this show too, I think would dig our show too, because of it kind of falls in a similar vein to what you guys do. So View from the Cheap Seats, thank you so much for letting us be a part of it, and we love you guys.
All right, thanks guys.
All right, so Harbaugh remains in the wind on January 25th. Latest word appears to be that the Raiders aren't going to make a move for Jim Harbaugh because they don't want a big personality coach who's weird after John Gruden.
It's sort of fair. I mean,
sort of fair. Not that we're implying that Jim Harbaugh has any of the same opinions that John Gruden does, but they just kind of want to lay low and don't want to like hire Harbaugh, which I always kind of thought was going to be the outcome here, because he was in the NFL with the 49ers and it lasted 4 years, and he went 8-8 his final season, and he'd gone to the playoffs the first three seasons, then they immediately deep sixed him for Jim Tomsula. And while I think Trent Baalke is not good at doing football things, that says something. And I think it says that NFL players are just not really going to put up with Harbaugh's whole shtick for very long. And so you could hire him and maybe have some success for a brief period of time, but that's not guaranteed, and it's going to be really annoying.
And you have to, the NFL is not as, you mentioned Trent Baalke, but like the NFL is not that far from the Trent Baalke level in general. Like there, you look at the people who are running the Minnesota Vikings, because like that's right now, I guess, like the most likely opportunity, because Chicago said no. Miami's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't take him out of Michigan. Like, if the Raiders are out, now it's like, okay, how about the Vikings? But I guess the Giants were in there too at some point. But like that, their ownership are insane people, and like that's true in a lot of places in the NFL where the owners want to be the people in charge, and the GMs want to be in people in charge, and like. Bringing a guy in like Harbaugh, who is going to, suck up all the oxygen, is not something a lot of those NFL-type people want to do. And it's not even about the players. A lot of the players are like, if we're going to win, give me Harbaugh. But I don't think that the front office people, and I think that this is probably true in a lot of places, they sided with Baalke in that whole thing, right? They didn't look at that and go, well, San Francisco was a, had idiots running the show. They looked at that and said, I don't want Harbaugh because I don't want that happening to me.
Yeah, and I think from Michigan's perspective, there will be some kind of contract extension. And if Harbaugh wasn't Harbaugh, I don't think he'd even be looking at the NFL, because just from the perspective of you were there, you were successful, it didn't really matter for your job. Mm-hmm. Like your dad lives next to you and your kids go to school or you went to school. It just feels like something that I have a hard time imagining.
Well, Las Vegas made sense because he met Sarah there. Like, they have family. He's family friends with the Davis family. They gave him his first coaching job. I thought that if the Raiders wanted him, he was probably going to go to the Raiders. I don't think that this is a, you know, I'm sure he kind of wants to go to the NFL. I think he's a weirdo and, you know, he did this, so now he's won the Big Ten. Now he can go back, and you know, he said he's done the job. But I also think because he's a weirdo, it's not the same as maybe somebody else who was like entertaining the NFL, and you go, oh no, my coach doesn't want to be here. Like, he still wants to be here.
Yeah, I mean, just I think that the whole attitude of the fan base, including myself, after the 2-4 COVID season, which obviously we read way too much into. I think probably hurt his feelings, I guess. I don't know.
I'm sure it did. I mean, we've heard the same things from insiders, too, that, like, Harbaugh, the family did not like the way that they were treated last year. But it wasn't... I don't think MGo Blog was at the top of the list. I know that we got down, and, like, you know, a lot of Michigan fans were going for soup and whatnot, but... I think it was the way that the program came back to him. And, like, you know, I'm sure he expected them to have kind of a lowball offer, but I don't think he was expecting it to be as low as it was. And, you know, Harbaugh's not about the money, but for them to give him for that to be the offer when he had to take whatever they had to offer, I'm sure made him feel in his competitive thought processes like, well, if, you know, if you think that's who I am, now let me show you who I am. And I'm sure that had part to do with, like, him at least entertaining the idea of the NFL right now, because, you know, he's a football coach. They want to be gods.
Yeah, and I don't know. It just feels like people have been talking about NIL and stuff like that, and it's like Michigan might take a little bit of time to get their stuff sorted out, but I don't think that they're going to be wilting flowers about this in a couple of years, where people will just get used to it and it'll be like, oh yeah, this is how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think that Harbaugh is, I don't think that's like the main problem for him. I can understand where, like, the competitive imbalance of what, like, Ohio State gets to do versus what Michigan gets to do, you know, chafes him just like it chafes everybody who has to deal with the, you know, the realities of what Michigan will do, what Michigan's set up to do, the way that Michigan's boosters want to act. You know, and then just the way that Michigan wants to protect its brand, you know, I'm sure those things bother him because he's trying to run a program as successfully as possible. So he's going to be naturally on the side of the students. Some things about Michigan are just never going to change, though. You know, the other schools are going to adapt at the same speed, and they have a head start. So if Michigan's adapting and the other schools are adapting, we're still just always going to be behind. I don't think we're going to be more behind than we have been in the past. I don't think it really changes the math as much as we wanted it to when we said, okay, unleash the money cannon. Because obviously, you know, Texas A&M can unleash their money cannon in ways that Michigan probably will never do.
Well, I guess we'll have to see. I think that there are Michigan fans who want to see the program succeed who have stupid amounts of money too, so we'll see.
Okay.
All right, we'll take a break, come back. We're going to talk some hockey with Alex.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high-quality and low-latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute. They will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give Attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Hope is the living, Coca-Cola's a sponsor. I run up with your boo. Hope is a monster. Yeah, they like me like that. Every girl I see wanna be white, be like that. I'm the king of Samunda, king of the summer. Come be my Kardashian, queen of the come up. To be loved, Shakespearean experience. To be us, jumping off boats, hopping off another cliff. Every 6 months I think I need a new bucket list. Yeah, I think I might need a harem. I'm way too much, y'all should share them. I'm feeling like a baron, all I need is a castle. Be my Halle Berry, all you need is a castle. All I need is heaven, I don't want the hassle. God bless the child.
All right, Michigan's coming off a four-point weekend against Minnesota, where they lose 1-2 in overtime off a five-minute major that Jacob Truscott picks up at the end of that game. Come back, kind of play like butt, get badly outshot on Saturday, but win 4-1, which is something that they're doing now. I kind of wish that they weren't doing that, but I guess it's better to win and not play well than lose and play well. They are now the number one team in the pairwise. They are tied for first in Big Ten play with Ohio State. And Minnesota is 6 points back, but they do have two games at hand, so they could pop up to contend for the title. I don't really understand what's going on where Penn State and Minnesota seem to be controlling play against Michigan for long stretches. Any insight there, guys?
They're also good teams.
Well, is Penn State a good team?
We talked about that yesterday. Alex, you had some insights into them.
Well, so one thing to talk about is that the Big Ten is really strong this year, and Hockey East and the ECAC are really weak. Friend of the pod, Nate Wells, has looked at this. If you just look at the pairwise, the respective leaders of those two conferences are in the top 10, and then nobody else from either of those conferences are even in like a firm tournament team. They're on the bubble. So, you know, a team like Penn State, which maybe isn't good in the Big Ten standings, did well in the non-conference. And the Big Ten is just really strong at the moment. I think that's one thing to keep in mind. But Michigan absolutely should be a better team than Penn State. So I don't know. It's a little confusing because this follows a couple weekends ago where you hammered UMass, who is arguably the best team in the pair. I mean, certainly in the pairwise, but you could argue out of those three might be the best team. A lot of talent on that squad. So I don't really know. I mean, Michigan played a strong game Friday, not a sharp Saturday. It's often tough to really parse that out.
They also do that, have done that all year, right? Like they've played strong in one game and then not quite the next. And I think that the difference in this situation is like their star power rescued them, because like you have these really nice plays from these really good players and they finish goals and they create chances and then they, you know, get a couple open looks and they score. I mean, we've seen that before where, you know, I mean, Beecher had the chance on Friday, right?
And oh my God.
He didn't. And Brisson had another really good look and he missed the net and they went in on Saturday. And yeah, I mean, Alex is right and you're right that they didn't, you know, play particularly well. But I mean, they were also in control of the game going into the second period. And then they're up 3-1. And I think that that also, you know, Portillo's playing well behind them. So it sets a little bit of a different mindset. And then in the third period, I mean, they played pretty even and got another goal. So there's not even really the need to go out and try to control the puck and dominate the game, because what you're doing is working and your goalie's playing well. So don't hang him out to dry.
Well, I think the big ice also has a effect there, because Minnesota much more used to the big ice. And so there's this situation where they're just kind of skating around the outside a lot and Michigan just kind of feels out of sorts. And you can tell me that this is crazy, but I felt like Minnesota made their ice intentionally terrible. People were slipping all over the place. Like pucks would not sit down. It just feels like whenever Michigan goes on the road, they're getting a slush pile to skate on.
There were definitely guys falling down on Saturday, but on the flip side, it would seem like if they were engineering the rink to advantage them, they would have made it so that the goal never comes off when the puck is in the offensive zone, because that happened like what, maybe 7-8 times between the two games, and always Eric Portillo and never Justin Close. So I don't really know what was going on with that.
I mean, Nate on Twitter is basically like, opposing goalies are doing this on purpose. When will they get called for it? Do you think, I mean, because a couple of those were pretty nice coincidences. And so by the end, I was like, I bet he's doing this on purpose. Do you have an opinion on if that was like a intentional bailout?
I don't know. I mean, to me, I feel like you see goalies hit the post like that a lot and the net never comes off. It just felt like the posts were really floppy. You could see them bend in ways that I don't know. I thought this would be standardized, but it just felt like the net would come off on a whim, essentially.
Yeah, it was. I think it was more not intentional, because a lot of times the old goalie trick, right? You sort of like stick the elbow out and nudge it off the post or whatever. I mean, this was Eric Portillo pushing off, and he would push off against the post and just blow it right straight off the, you know, not even just a little, oh, it's dislodged. And the fact they came out to work on it, I think, suggests there was some structural issues going on with the way they were trying to attach that.
Yeah, because you see goalies do that quite frequently, and usually the net doesn't come off. So yeah. I don't know what to make about that. But
I'd have to go back and look and see if it was the same goal. Like if it was always the same one, or if it was equally split. Because if it's equally split, then it's just probably Minnesota. If it's one, then maybe somebody knows something.
So one guy who's taking on sort of a bigger role as the season goes along here is Mark Estapa. So he, I think, was on the second line in this game. He's a big body. He moves pretty well. Doesn't have a ton of skill, but if you want a guy to win some board battles and be a physical presence, I think he fits the bill. What have you seen from him?
Well, I like him on that line with Brisson and Bortolo. It's interesting, by the way, because a subplot in this weekend is that Mel fired up the line blender again. And we had this line of Johnson and Beniers with Brisson that was just gangbusters against UMass. Now it's broken up and they're going back to the 2-2 pairs. And so when you do that, you have Brisson and Bortolo together, and you don't really have a guy to retrieve the puck, right? When you have Beniers out there, he's someone who's going to go into the corners and really fight. Bortolo's not that kind of player. He's also not as big. I think he could use an extra 10 pounds of muscle, but he doesn't have that right now. You don't really want Brisson being the one going into the corner, because you want him floating around the high danger areas for when chances come around. So you need a retriever, and Estapa has shown that. I thought he was really strong right in that sequence, right around when the Duke goal happened in the Friday night game, retrieving pucks, throwing them into the slot. I think there's room for him there, and he has a touch of skill. I mean, remember, didn't he score a lacrosse goal in the...
Yeah, he had a five-point USHL season, and one of them was in Michigan.
Yeah, so he's got a little touch of skill, but in terms of a guy who can play more around the net when you need that, who can go into the corner when you dump it in, I like him there. I think that he has a little bit more to offer than like a Nolan Moyle, who might not have that skill or can really hang with that group.
The other guy who really jumped out to me as a guy taking steps forward last weekend was Ethan Edwards. So he really, I think, thrived on the big ice, and his ability to skate and his calmness with the puck, I think, was important because Minnesota was actually forechecking Michigan, which doesn't really happen a lot. And so I think there was a notable difference when he was out there versus the third pairing.
Well, his defense has also improved. Like, he's making plays, like, not only on the puck, but off the puck and deflecting passes and getting in the way. And, you know, he kind of got unlucky in that Nyes goal, I think, because he was right there and Nyes made a really nice play on Friday.
I mean, that was just, yeah, the puck hops out and he just bats it out of the air. There's a whole lot you can do about that.
But I mean, Alex has talked about his skating all year, and you can definitely see that. And now he's learning how to time his jumps. I mean, it's, you know, it's not just like Hughes where he's like, oh, there's no one in front of me, I'm gone. But he's like picking his spots and he's stepping in. And then his diagonal pass to, I think it was Brisson on Saturday, was like, I mean, this is sort of what we've been waiting for, because he's jumped up a little like that against, I can't remember if it was Penn State or Massachusetts, but one of those games where he started to really walk into the zone and get like a high danger chance on net and, you know, saved or goes wide or something that happens. But you can just see that, I mean, if they lose, they're going to lose power next year. Maybe they lose Hughes. It's up in the air. It depends on Blankenberg. He does have availability, but I think that the way that Edwards is trending, you're looking at, he's going to be starting to shoot up the line pairings next year for sure. And I feel feeling more and more comfortable with it.
He's going to shoot up the line pairings in 3 weeks. I mean, you're losing Owen Power. You're going to need someone to log a lot of minutes in that capacity. And
well, I think the thing with that is that you could keep him on the third pairing and have him, Blankenberg, and Hughes all on different lines, and then you kind of have sort of like carbon copies of different lines at different skill levels.
That's a possibility. I think, though, that just the reality is that Power is about, you know, that's a 20 to 25 minute per night player, and so you're going to need to find some minutes, and I like what Edwards is doing, and the one thing I'll throw in here is that Edwards, I mean, he is a physical player despite that size, which is the interesting thing you don't really see. He likes to hit. 5'11", 185 is where he's listed, and yet he is throwing the body around, especially in the corners, comes up and just hammers guys, sometimes a little reckless. I think there was a hit on Saturday where it was kind of like, oh, boy, you know, that was a little dicey. But I do like that little touch in his game, and he's definitely going to be a big player. I think you're looking at some guys that are going to need to step up in the month of February. He's one of them. I think Bortolo obviously is going to be one of them. Sam Moskevich will be one of them. And so those kinds of guys are going to really determine, you know, where Michigan's season is going to end up and whether they can win the Big Ten regular season title.
So what exactly is going to happen for the Olympic break? What games are the three guys going to miss?
Okay, so they have to report at the start of February. The first weekend after that is Michigan's bye weekend, which is kind of nice because Minnesota plays all three weekends during the Olympics. Michigan only plays two. There's the USNTDP exhibition that week. Then you have the two games against MSU, home for one, and then the duel in the D. And then after that...
What's that trophy for, Brian?
Well, it's the Iron D.
Okay. I want to make sure we get that out recorded.
Yeah. And then it's the home weekend against Ohio State after that, February like 21st
February 18th
or 22nd,
and
19th. Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so...
that is extremely annoying because Ohio State is currently at the top of the standings with Michigan. And all four games versus Ohio State, Michigan is going to be down Powers, Beniers, and Brisson. Actually, not well, but they missed all the World Juniors guys in the December series. And now they're going to be down three of their best players for the home series.
It's definitely not fun.
Played them pretty well though in Columbus, and you know the second game was a big, like you had mentioned, a slush pot that they're playing on, which was just a wreck, and they were down a lot of guys. I think they won by 3 or 4 goals the first game, and then the second game was like a 1-goal game going into the last probably 16 minutes when Michigan ran out of gas. So, and I'm not even convinced that Michigan can't split that and be okay. I mean, obviously you want to win both, and then you're probably in pretty good shape in the conference, but if they split, I mean, Michigan still has other games that they can win, and Ohio State has a bunch of tough games too.
Yeah, and then you would, in theory, get those guys back for the final weekend against Notre Dame, which, again, I say in theory, there's a lot of question marks about what happens if players in China test positive. That's the big risk of the Olympics, but if everything goes smoothly with that, you can get those guys back for the final week of the season. Ohio State doesn't play the last week of the regular season. So you would be exiting that OSU series knowing either it's over or we have to take X number of points against Notre Dame to wrap it up. So that's kind of the stakes here. And I think the good thing about playing Ohio State of all the teams is that at least that's not a team with a ton of drafted guys, right? And yeah. So you can kind of play a more physical game, put more of your grinders out there and perhaps be okay. And you know, the big thing is you're still with Eric Portillo. He didn't get poached by Sweden, and if you're talking about losing forwards and defensemen, what can be the equalizer there? Well, a goalie performance that lifts your whole team up is often the easiest way to get around that.
I'm looking forward to being the number one overall seed and playing 3,000 miles away from Ann Arbor, guys.
You just want to play American, don't you? Because they literally look like Yellow Jackets.
Well, I'm just...
If we get far enough away, then there are Michigan fans. That's the thing. Like, if they could play in L.A., we'd be fine, right? Or, like, put it in New York, we'd have all sorts of fans there. It's just, putting it in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, is what's getting us every year.
What about Philly? Yeah, it's going to be in Philly.
Yeah, Allentown, you could get some fans to ride up from somewhere. Probably
Michigan
not very many, but
I refuse to go.
You've refused to go for like 15 years, though.
Yeah, but I just refused to. Like, I went to Fort Wayne because it was within reasonable driving distance, but I'm not going to go to a regional outside of the region when there's literally no chance that Michigan could actually be. I still don't understand why the athletic department isn't bidding every year in Toledo. Because that's an ECHL rink that packs itself out. There's a lot of Michigan fans there. They could. I don't think there's really any excuse, because maybe it costs you some money, but you're the University of Michigan. Spend the money.
I don't know why the athletic department isn't saying, let's play at Yost.
Well, they won't. They won't host at Yost. I mean, you could bid at Yost, and they just won't. They'll say no.
Well, I mean, pushing for home sites is.
But they stopped all this in the first place because of Yost. Because Yost was such a home field advantage in the early 2000s that they're like, nope, we're going to a completely different system that doesn't create this anymore.
Right, because rewarding teams for playing well during the regular season is a stupid thing that we don't want to do, because we want our playoff to be the worst playoff in America.
Yeah, and Allentown looks like the likely spot at the moment. Things could change in the pairwise, but the team you're jostling with is Minnesota State, who would be in line for the Loveland spot, so that would put Michigan in line for the Allentown spot. So that looks like it at the moment, but a lot can change.
Fortunately, you know, going back to like the Big Ten, you know, winning the Big Ten at least this year, you know, Michigan's next four games are Wisconsin and Michigan State, neither of which have been good at all this year. So, I mean, hopefully, you get 8 points out of those games, and you know, it's going to be a pretty tough haul for, I think maybe Ohio State has to win both those in order to knock Michigan out.
I would prefer 12 points personally, but you're exactly right. And Wisconsin is we should talk for a minute about them just because Michigan's going to play them this weekend. But I mean, Alex and I were talking yesterday about it, and like their goalie got chased in both games against Penn State.
Goalie isn't bad though. It's the fact they are shooting 6% as a team for the season. Which is their central problem.
Wow.
Yeah, they're 58th out of 58 teams in shooting percentage.
Yeah, I remember there was a team that Michigan had like 2-3 years ago, and I was looking their shooting percentage was 7. And I was like, this is unsustainably bad. This is, yeah, we don't have a ton of talent, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah, so which it is. It's a combination of bad luck and other problems, unquestionably, but they're only scoring 2 goals per game. Michigan's a much better team. You at least should be angry going into that series, because if you look at the scope of the season, the one game that is really hurts is that one back at Yost that you threw away with a myriad of problems, notably Bordalo falling down in front of the net and allowing Wisconsin to pot an easy goal. But like, if you had had that one back, you'd be in a little bit better spot in the standings. And so if nothing else, that should be fuel for this weekend. And you've got your whole roster. There's no excuse not to hammer them.
Well, that plain and series simple. Against Notre Dame where
yeah, that one's lost the other one.
Overtime both nights after having third period leads was pretty bad too.
Yeah, but yeah. Notre Dame's at least a pretty good team that is on track to make the tournament or come really close and even has a shot to make a run in the Big Ten. Wisconsin is, I mean, I think their leading goal scorer is at 7, and that's a defenseman.
38th in pairwise is Wisconsin, too. So no. This is the team you need to take care of business with.
Yeah,
and I think then their penalty kills at like 70% as well. So, like, everything that we keep listing is like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, at least they get shots off, though, and Michigan State doesn't even, you know, can't even get the puck right to the net.
Well, and Michigan State just lines up everybody in front of their goalie. It's just what they've been doing for years.
Yeah, but they're not even really doing it that well this year. And, I mean, you look at their numbers, that's another team you should really take care of. And they're struggling right now, too. But that's a few weeks away with the bye week thrown in. So you take it a couple weeks, you know, each week at a time, and then just focus on Wisconsin this weekend.
All right, thank you, guys. We'll talk to you probably next week because we're coming down to the home stretch here.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook. And too soon, Brian. Way too soon.
All right. See ya.
Who's got it better than us?